Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to episode 4 of the Football Full Disclosure. Talking to you is Dean Sanusi, and I'm joined here by Mr. Marty Bailey.
Hello.
Hello. Well, we missed you last week, didn't we?
Oh, I was here.
Are you here? Of course you were here, but you must have been itching to get involved.
There were a couple of points I was like, I've got something to say, but, you know, I thought I'd be
It's quiet. Okay. Right? I mean, we do after, you know, we finish recording, we do have, like, another discussion.
Yeah.
Which we can probably call the extra disclosure.
Yes, the extra disclosure.
The extra disclosure. So we are at game week 9, and we had an interesting one. We've had some big news, obviously. I'm sure most of you who follow football have seen it. It's finally over. It's sad, with great sadness. Ten Hag's nightmare is over. But nightmare for who? Nightmare for United or nightmare for Ten Hag? Or nightmare for both? Because I think... Yeah, this has been coming, and it's come after a 2-1 defeat at the London Stadium. That was 2-1 loss to West Ham. And I think it was a bit harsh. You know, they conceded a penalty late in the game. Danny Ings obviously converted, but it was a coming together with De Ligt and Danny Ings. And I think it was a harsh penalty.
Yeah, we talked about it before, didn't we? I think, you could say it's... He might have been on his way down before there was even contact, and it's soft. It's very soft, and you don't want to lose it that way.
No. But
when you talk about sadness, with great sadness, I think you mean great sadness for everybody apart from Manchester United supporters. I would imagine Manchester United supporters are now like, okay, look, let's look to the future. Let's get someone new in, and of course, there's already a name that's floating around.
Floating around. That's Amorim, who is currently managing Sporting Lisbon in Portugal. He was linked with us very heavily, wasn't he, over the summer before we obviously, you know, went for Slot. But once again, you know, this Ineos, the group that's taken over United, will this be the right decision for them? Because they have made, well, previously Ineos, the Glazers have made a litany of errors in managers. You know, obviously Moyes replacing Ferguson. We've had Mourinho, we've had Solskjaer, we've had interim in Ragnik. Missing a Dutch manager somewhere in there.
Van Gaal.
And Van Gaal, of course. And Ten Hag, which just didn't work out. And will Amorim work out? That's...
Good reputation. He's done well in Sporting.
He's got a very good reputation.
Won them their first title in a lot of
years,
I think.
In a long time.
Well. But again, as we talked about before, it's... Manchester United don't really have an identity, I don't think, at the moment.
No.
And that's what they need to find. So they need a manager to have an idea about how he wants his team to play.
Yes.
And he needs to get players who fit that system. But it has to be done all the way down to every level of the club. They need to figure out what kind of club they want to be. And then they need to go from there, because they've been wayward for a long, long time, since Ferguson left, basically.
So we're talking identity. And to establish an identity, you need... this to permeate right through the club. And we're not just talking, obviously, the first 11. We are talking the entire squad. We're talking coaching staff. We are talking right down to the cleaners, right down to the cooks. Like, what kind of identity are we talking about? Is this something Liverpool have a much, much more, which is a community identity? Or is this whatever works for United, I guess? But this has to be... something that will take, surely, you know, 4 to 5 years to actually establish.
Yeah, it's going to take a while.
It's
they keep kind of trying to reset, don't they? But it never really happens. So, I mean,
no.
Is it the owners? Is that the problem? I think a lot of Man United supporters would say the Glazers have been a problem for a long time.
They have.
They've got Ratcliffe in now.
Yes.
Is he going to make it any better? I don't know. We can see...
He's going to run it like a business from the looks of it.
Right? He's going to run it like a business. And as you said, maybe what they're lacking is that kind of family... community, part of the team. They need that running through the core.
Okay.
And as Ferguson's now gone, or I say gone, he's been kind of booted out.
That is scandalous. In my opinion, Alex Ferguson, you know, don't get me wrong, for years and years and years, I disliked Alex Ferguson, but I respected Alex Ferguson. And you need a legend like that at the club. Removing him as your, whatever he was, the ambassador of somewhat, I think that sends the wrong message. Or do they believe having Ferguson there around adds too much pressure on people? I don't know. But for me personally, I think you have to have the club legend. He's, you know, he is the legend. He put United on that pedestal, you know, in the modern era. And you can't treat someone like Alex Ferguson with such, you know, such disregard. I think that's just, it's shocking for many of us.
Disregard, disrespect. Yeah. Obviously, he's a Manchester United legend. Mm. He's one of the greatest Manchester United managers, but he's probably one of the greatest managers in English football ever as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a fair point. I'm the same as you. Obviously, being a supporter of any other team during the Ferguson era, you didn't like him because he won everything.
And it was Fergie time.
Yeah, Fergie time just dominated basically everyone. But yes, of course you had to respect him because he was that good.
Absolutely.
And then just to have that experience, that character around the club, everybody loves, all the fans love, and then be like, no, you can't be a part of that anymore. That doesn't make sense. I agree. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, I'm sure Alex Ferguson will be fine because not long after they made him, well, they removed him as club ambassador, he was watching a Aberdeen game, you know, the club that he actually, you know, made his name. So, I'm sure Alex Ferguson will be okay in the grand scheme of it. And I'm pretty sure also, you know, he'll be in and around United here and there, just not in the ambassadorial role that he used to be in. But in, you know, for us, good luck to United, whoever they do bring in. Amorim, if it's him, it's looking like it will almost definitely be Amorim. And, you know, as a fan of a Liverpool, a very strong Liverpool supporter, let's hope that United get back to where they used to be. But yeah.
Well, I'd like to see them be a little bit more competitive.
I think so. I think it's not fun.
Games, right?
It isn't fun going to Old Trafford and just, you know, turn them over 3-0 and 5-0 and things like that. You know, you want to see some passion from United players. But, you know, going back to the United angle, the clear out will take a long time. And currently, whatever squad that they have right now, I mean, you'd imagine the entirety of the squad will be cleared out. You know, this Amorim will probably come in and a vast majority of those players are guys he won't fancy. He won't want, you know, they were signed under very much different managers, different administrations, whatever it is. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem as if that squad of players have the passion.
Well, apparently Anthony's been transfer listed already.
That like, says right, it all.
Let's start shipping him out before the new manager comes in kind of thing.
Wowzers. Okay.
You know, I'll imagine there'll be some movement in January.
In January. Mm. Okay. Well, anyway, let's wish United all the luck in the future. Not, but yeah. Let's move on to the Emirates, where Arsenal-Liverpool at the Emirates, who played out a 2-2 draw. That was an interesting game, wasn't it? You know, it was, you know, first half, they've almost definitely had us.
They definitely had us.
And some dubious decisions, in my opinion. But overall, I would say that game was refereed quite well, barring the free kick that led to the Arsenal goal. You know, other than that, I think, you know, it was a good game of football. You know, it was, you know, that slot football, trying to have control. You know, we're long away from Mr. Klopp's rock and roll football. This is, you know, Slot has whatever identity he wants to imprint into the team, it's there and it's clear. And, you know, the Arsenal tactic of winning free kicks, because quite clearly they're a danger. They're a danger from set pieces.
They're a real danger from set pieces. They got the best record in the league, don't they?
Yeah. So, you know, you could see the Arsenal tactic was very much win free kicks, fall over, you know, this and that. And I'm not entirely sure how much I can respect someone like Mikel Arteta. You know, he's, you know, this is a guy that's, you know, he was coached by Arsene Wenger. He knows, you know, good football. He's a Spanish manager, obviously. But this current tactic of falling over, and they're playing at home.
I liked Carragher's take on it when he said he's starting to look more like Mourinho than Guardiola.
Is that a compliment? Absolutely not.
No, probably. I think it's playing on pretty much what you're talking about. What he's looking for, play for set pieces.
This kind of mentality. I mean, you play to your strengths. You have to play to your strengths. And, you know, I read something a while back which it said that Arteta, for the last 3 or 4 years, he's obviously tried to play a Wenger-style football, you know, fluid football, and they've won nothing. They've won absolutely nothing. So I guess right now, you know, the mentality is very much, you know, we play to win games. And, you know, it should always be playing to win games, but you want to win with a bit of class, don't you? Yeah, especially when you're at home. Yeah, and it looked at, you know, periods of that game that we could have actually gone on to win. You know, I was quite surprised to see us fight back, because, you know, there was a statistic that says, you know, in this Slot era, we hadn't scored a goal past 75 minutes.
Yeah,
so you know, I saw that thinking, eesh, doesn't look good. Doesn't look like, you know, we might equalize. But actually, you know, the players, they carried on pushing, and they got that equalizer. And, you know, I think Slot himself was like, come on, keep pushing. And it looked like, you know, parts of the game that actually we could go on to win this. So, yeah.
It would have been a huge result if we had got
it would
got
have
a win
been
there.
Massive.
I mean, look, Arsenal were, people keep using the word depleted. I don't think that's the case.
Oh.
They were missing, obviously,
Gabriel. He went off injured. Saliba was suspended.
So
Calliafour, the Italian.
He was out as well.
He was out.
Aside from that, I think they were. I mean, okay. Saka came back, and obviously not good for us.
The entire time Arteta had been playing into, oh, Saka's injured. He might not start. Then who do you see in the starting lineup? Who gets the goal within the first 10 minutes? Saka.
I think if Saka's not in that team, that's a very different game. Because he was running Robertson ragged in that
we
game.
We spoke about that, didn't we, earlier? Andy Robertson.
Mm. Well, one of the best signings we've made, I've got to be honest.
He was, what, 9 million for Hull?
I think it's 8 million from Hull.
8 million from Hull. What I think, you know, if we ever do a segment on the best signings, I think Andy Robertson goes in there for the things he's done.
Free transfer. In
modern day football, 8 million probably could be considered a free transfer.
No, but Joel Matip, when he came in,
that's a great signing. So, but Andy Robertson is looking, word I want to use is ragged. He looks tired. He looks just a bit out of it. I'm not sure if he's nursing an injury of some sort, but he just looked a little bit depleted, maybe might be another word we could use to describe it. And you know, when you look at it and you think, okay, if not Andy Robertson, we've got Kostas Tsimikas. You know, he's
good. Looking better.
He looks better in some respects, doesn't he? He looks more energetic than Robertson. And I think maybe it might be a good shout to give maybe Tsimikas a bit of a run aside.
He's certainly improved, I think, as a footballer under Slot. And he looks better. He looks more. He doesn't look like a liability, which I thought in some games before you were like a little bit worried that you might get caught out on that side.
Yes.
But he's looked a lot better. And getting forward, he can whip in across.
Absolutely. He's got a couple of assists, I think, already. Yeah. So
he's doing all right.
He's doing okay. So we have options there. But, you know, these are two men who are probably coming close to, you know, 32, thereabouts. Maybe Tsimikas might be a bit younger. I think we need to start looking at that left back.
Tsimikas is a lot younger.
Okay. But we need to start looking at that left back position because, you know, I think Andy Robertson possibly could be looking like next season, maybe, isn't a guaranteed starter. But then saying that, you know, what about Trent, who has, what do you think? Trent to Real Madrid? Is it likely? Is it possible? It wouldn't be the first time we've had a Liverpool player move to Real Madrid and succeed, which they often do.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to succeed at probably the best club in the world, isn't it? But that's the worry, isn't it? Because if he doesn't see us maybe winning the league, you know, if we're not ahead come December, going into January,
you think
time,
he moves on.
I think he will be thinking, right, if we don't win something this season, he might start talking to Real Madrid.
That's a shame. That would be a shame. That would be a shame to lose somebody, a player in his prime. In my opinion, the best, you know, best right back in the world. I know people will throw out names like Danny Carvajal and whatnot, but I think Trent, with the things that he can do with the ball, I don't think you've got, you know, I don't think there are midfielders in the world that can do what Trent does with the ball. And it would be a massive, massive shame to lose someone like that. So, you know, if Trent, if you are listening, sign that contract. Please sign that contract. But let's not get too caught up on Liverpool, because obviously, full disclosure, we are Liverpool supporters. So let's not get too caught up on our team, because we can speak for hours about Liverpool. But let's move on to Stamford Bridge, West Ham. So rather, it was Chelsea, Newcastle. And that was a 2-1 win for Chelsea. Things are clicking in place for Chelsea.
Looking a lot better.
They're looking a lot better.
Have to eat your words on the Jackson for fantasy football. I said having me and you were like, oh, I don't know about him.
I still don't know about him. I know. It's one of those ones. You know, for fantasy, you look at it and you think, this guy is scoring goals, but I don't think he'll score in the next game. And then what do? They score in the next game. And you think, should I get him in? No, I don't think he'll score in this game. And then he scores. And now, I don't know. I'm still in an aura about Jackson. But he's looking good. He's getting goals. But how can you not, when you have fantastic Cole Palmer playing behind you? He's that this guy has to be in the conversation for, if not team of the season, almost definitely.
He'll definitely be in team of the season.
Almost definitely team of the season. But I think player of the season. I think he's almost definitely in that conversation, because the things he's doing right now, you know, he's currently, what, he scored 9 goals already this season, 7 or 9 goals. Cole Palmer is just, he's a wonder to watch.
He's good.
He plays with, he's so calm. He's so relaxed. And from what I gather, he's just thinking about fish and chips. That's all in his mind. Mm. So, you know, fair play to the lad. I think he's having a fantastic season. So
I love how he just doesn't give anything to people when he's getting interviewed as well. He just gives them nothing. He's like, well, I just play football.
I just play football. Yeah. So how did you do what you do? Oh, I just did it. I just kicked it into the goal. But credit to him. Whatever he's doing is absolutely working. So, you know, Cole Palmer, carry on, you know, because he is doing wonders for my fantasy football league.
Yeah,
so.
Again, he's another player you have to have in. You can't not have him in at the moment, can you? As for player of the season, I mean, we're pretty early on in the season. Anything can happen. But if he keeps it up, then absolutely. I mean,
I think so.
Possibilities
are
endless.
It'll be a toss-up between him and, from the looks of it, Haaland. So saying that, we can head over to the Etihad. How this game finished 1-0, I will never know, because it was chances galore. I'm fairly sure Haaland could have had 5 goals by the first half, but somehow he only finished with 1 goal. And I have no idea what it is, whether it was Southampton's style of play, but Pep, you know, Pep, top 3 managers in the world, top manager in the world for some people. He's come out and said, Russell Martins, his philosophy, his style of football is amazing. You know, this is obviously Southampton's Russell Martins, but, you know, style of football, philosophy, they are languishing in relegation. They've not won a game yet. So, you know, you take philosophy and you have the best manager complimenting you, yet you haven't won a game.
Yeah, but that's Pep, though, isn't it?
That's Pep.
He beats I'm going to say the minnow teams, but, you know, the little clubs in the league, and he's like, such a good manager, great philosophy. They're going to do well, and then
with the resources they have, not being backed by an actual nation or anything else of that nature. But, you know, that's Pep. And also congratulations to Rodri, who received his Ballon d'Or on crutches. This is the first player in the Premier League since Ronaldo, 2008. To receive a Ballon d'Or. So, you know, the Premier League, you know, we can produce amazing players.
Yeah, and Trent, stick around.
Trent, stick around. There we go, Trent. But Rodri, you know, how do you not give it to Rodri? I mean, I know, you know, there's the massive conversation is Vinicius Jr. should have won it. But, you know, let's break it down. You know, there are certain categories that they look at. It's individual performance. Rodri, I think, has lost 1 game in 1 year. It's team performance. This is a Man City team that has won everything. You know, yes, you know, the charges, 115 charges, being backed by an actual literal nation. Put that aside. They've won everything. And this is character. You know, you say what you like about the Man City team, but I think, you know, they're okay. You know, they're not getting sent off and things of that nature. You know, they're okay. So I think Rodri, you know, for the things he's done with Spain, I think absolutely, completely 100% deserved. Vinicius Jr., I think, you know, the discussion was he and the other Real Madrid players boycotted the Ballon d'Or ceremony because they felt like if it's not going to Vinicius, we don't need to show up. Jude Bellingham came second, or third rather. So, you know, what do you think about that? You know, was Rodri the right guy?
Yeah, I think so. I think you see what a different team, we've talked about this, is talked about so much. How much a different team Man City are without him in their team. Goes to show how important a player he is and how good he is for that club. That he just makes them. I mean, yeah, you say again, say what you said. Everything about Man City, they've, you know, a lot of backing. They got loads and loads of good players. But even so, without his presence,
without him,
it is different. They're just not as good, are they?
You look at the Spain team. You know, he came off injured in that final, and the moment he came off, England. You know, we equalize. So, you know, that's a team without, you know, that's a team without Rodri that potentially could have lost the final. So, you know, I think say what you want about Man City. I think for me, Rodri is, you know, categorically the best player in the world right now. I mean, the ACL injury, it's, you know, it's a killer for him. and you hope that he comes back, you know, the type of player that he was before the injury. But, you know, you have to give him his flowers right now. And, you know, he dedicated the award, funny enough, to Xavi, to Iniesta, to Casillas, to Busquets, you know, all Spanish players. He dedicated it to them because they are players in the past who were not considered for the Ballon d'Or. So, you know, he wanted to, you know, one for Spanish football, essentially. So, you know, credit to the lad. You know, he's received the best award in football and he's dedicated to his, you know, to his mates. So, yeah. Fair play to Rodri. So let's move on to Selhurst Park. And we had Palace versus Spurs. And Spurs. Team inconsistent. So that was obviously a 1-0 win for Palace. Glasner, the Palace manager, he desperately needed a win, because I think, you know, it was, you know, obviously the discussion had been Glasner, Ten Hag, who's going to lose their job first? And obviously Ten Hag, he's long gone now, but Glasner needed a win. And, you know, especially with the team that he has at his disposal, you know, Eze, he's a star player for Palace. But Spurs, what can you say about Spurs? Just, you know, they've come in for, you know, with a decent-ish run. You know, there was obviously the surprise against Brighton. But once again, this is a game that you'd imagine Spurs should win.
They should be winning this one. I mean, Brighton are a good team. And I think Brighton can probably get a result against anybody in the league.
Yeah.
If on their day, I think they could probably, they've really turned the club around.
Mm-hmm.
But you should be beating Palace, I think,
you
if you're Spurs. And I think everybody's looking at it and thinking, okay, what's going on here? Okay, they're away from home. But nevertheless, you'd expect them to be doing better.
Mm.
They need Son to get back to his best, because he's such been such an important player for them over the last few seasons. And he's not firing on the cylinders that he once was. Obviously, he's injured again now.
I don't think any of them are, really. I think I see Maddison in there. I think Maddison, this is the second time he's been slung out after the first half. I think he managed up to about 50 or so minutes. And Ange, you know, he's taken him out. So, you know, there's something he doesn't particularly like about maybe Maddison, and maybe, you know, whatever he's doing or not doing, he just doesn't like. You know, they obviously play a high-line football. And maybe Maddison just isn't cut out for this style of play, possibly. You know, but it's not just Maddison. You know, his son isn't playing the best. Solanke, you know, he's big money signing. He's not scoring the goals that you'd expect him to score. And he scored a lot of goals from Bournemouth. He scored, 19, 20 goals last season? And he's got 1 or 2 goals this season. It's, you know, so Spurs, for me, are not in the conversation for top four just because the inconsistent, they're too inconsistent to be considered for that top four.
No, I don't think they will be anywhere near the top four. I think pushing for Europe is where they should be at based on their inconsistencies. Mm. Just trying to get European football next season, I think, would be enough.
Oh, well, they're currently playing in the Europa League. They're at top of the league, or shared top place with a few other teams. But moving on to another team that obviously is playing European football, and in my opinion, I think they are seeing the impacts of that. You know, this is a team that almost definitely should be finishing top four, but, you know, might be affected by that. And that is obviously Villa. So we heading over to Villa Park, and that was Villa versus Bournemouth. And that was a 1-1 draw. It was a Bournemouth late goal, wasn't it?
So really
it was really late. It was Evan Nielsen.
Six.
Yeah. And I think what we're seeing right now is a very good Villa side. They almost definitely have surprised people in the Champions League. You know, an amazing game against Bayern Munich, obviously. But I think, can they challenge in the Premier League and do bits in the Champions League at the same time? It's going to be tough for them.
It's going to be really tough. And I think because it's not something they're used to, I mean, every club who finishes in the top four is challenging, you know, the higher clubs in the league, and then has to deal with Champions League football, the strains of that, and then the domestic cups as well, figure out very quickly this is not going to be easy. You need to have a lot of depth, and I'm not sure that they have that. So either they're going to get knocked out of the Champions League, and that'll free them up to really push on again in the league.
Or
if they do continue and drag it out a bit more, then their league form, I think, is going to drop. So
I think I wouldn't be surprised to see them have a good Champions League run. I was speaking to a Villa supporter today, actually, another teacher. Hopefully we have him on in the next episode. But he seems to think that Villa could win the Champions League, which I laughed at. But actually, when you sit down and you look at someone like Unai Emery, he's got real, you know, European football pedigree. I think he's got two Europa Leagues with Sevilla. I think, you know, so it might not be out of the realm of impossibility for Villa to actually be considered for, you know, an actual Champions League. And it'll be a nice, you know, breath of fresh air to have another team like that possibly get in, you know, to a semi-final, maybe even to a final. Obviously not at the, you know, Liverpool, not over us, obviously. But, you know, it would be an interesting one to see, Villa having a good Champions League run.
Well, stranger things have happened. I think if you'd ask their supporters, look, Champions League, but you know, you finish like sixth, they'd be like, that's fine, we'll take that. Because a few seasons ago, we were just happy to be in Europe, and now we're right up there. So maybe sacrifice the league and really push for the Champions League and try and get somewhere in that.
We had this conversation with Aiden last week, didn't we? And he, you know, I asked him top four or an FA Cup, and you know, he picked top four every day of the week, relegation or an FA Cup. And he was, I think he would take a cup over, you know, over relegation. So I think, well, not being relegated rather, and I think that's an interesting one, because the cup might mean more to these teams. A cup might mean more to the fans. So, you know, having Villa finish whatever, seventh, eighth place, but actually getting to a final of the Champions League, that might just be, you know, it makes up for it. It could make up for it at the end of the day. So, so moving on, let's head over to the Amex Stadium where Brighton hosted Wolves. And this was a much, much, much needed point for Gary O'Neill. Marty, have you seen there's a freeze frame and it's four Brighton players.
I loved it.
It's brilliant. Yeah. Four Brighton players, one Wolves player. And
the only pass he didn't want to make was the one that he made. Pass.
And somehow, and this is what, this is a 2-1 to Brighton. Who knows what, whatever's happening, in my opinion, go to the corner. But either way, 4-1 has ended with Wolves equalizing, which I think is just, that's why we love the Premier League. It's one of the things why we absolutely love the Premier League, because things like that can happen. But my God, how do you go from 4-1 to conceding?
I mean, that I don't know. I can't remember who it was who made the pass. But, I mean, he could have hit it anywhere.
Anywhere.
Apart from where he hit it and been okay. Like, literally, it could have gone anywhere. And, like, it probably would have made it to one of his players. He just had to kick it across. The one place he didn't want to put it is the one place where he put it. And then they get punished. But it shows great character from Wolves. And this is what I was saying. I don't...
Oh, no.
This point is a big point. Because away from home, and Brighton are...
They are not
a good
an easy
team.
Side.
Yeah,
no.
They are not an easy side. No. And I think now their run of fixtures... There's winnables in there. I mean, they should be. I would imagine in 6 weeks
they'll pick up points.
They will be around just under mid-table.
Yeah,
that's my prediction.
So fingers crossed. Let's hope Gary O'Neill, because he's a manager I like. I think he's also, you know, he is part of the Liverpool family. He had, I think, coached an under 19 team or something in the past. So, you know, Gary O'Neill is almost definitely a manager to watch for the future. And you know, he had a very good season with Wolves last season. He's obviously been unlucky this season, but I think, you know, we're both, you know, fans of Gary O'Neill, and you know, we hope he obviously has a good season. So fingers crossed. And let's head over to the King Power Stadium, and Leicester were hosting Forest, who, you know, Forest are doing very well
and have a great season.
Very well. Chris Wood, Kiwi. He's doing bits, isn't he? You know, he's got a couple of goals. I think Ryan Yates scored another, you know, really good finish from outside of the box. So, you know, I think Forest, I think, are one of those sides right now that, you know, they're not being talked about enough. And that might actually play into their hand because, you know, there's no focus on them. But they're actually, you know, they're picking up decent wins. You know, they obviously picked up a win at Anfield against us, you know, and for them, that would be something that actually maybe they don't want people talking too much about that because they don't want focus on them.
No, just get on with it.
Just getting on with it. You know, they've got Nuno Espirito Santo as their manager, who I think, you know, is a very good manager. He didn't have a really good, you know, really good experience at Spurs. He obviously did really good things with Wolves. So I think in Nuno, they've got a very, very strong manager. So I think, you know, Forest are doing quite well. Forest are doing quite well.
They're doing
right
very
now.
Well. 20 shots in total in that game.
Wow.
Only 5 on target and scored 3. So, I mean, obviously they need to improve that.
Yeah.
I like Forest. I think they're a team with a history. I think they should be playing Premier League football. They should be playing in the top divisions. I mean, they've won Champions Leagues. They've won top division titles. They're a team that should be there and thereabouts.
Side with pedigree.
I actually met the Nottingham Forest team way back when Steve Stones was playing with them. Came to my local village to the golf club. Yeah, got to meet a few of the players.
Okay.
So I got a little connection there as well. But yeah, no, I think they'll do well. I mean, they're doing well now. I expect they will keep it up. Wood is another player that probably people need to have in their fantasy teams. I don't have, but he's doing good stuff.
Last season I transferred in Wood, and it was Wood versus Newcastle. And obviously he'd played for Newcastle. And, you know, I have a thing where I like to transfer in players when they're facing their previous side, because I always think, you know, they give a little bit more. And obviously this is, you know, he has also obviously played for Leicester. So this is another previous side. I didn't actually stick to my philosophy this time, but, you know, if anyone's listening out there, that's something to look into. You know, if you're also playing the fantasy football, just get in a player that plays, that's facing his previous side. You know, you'll find that actually their motivation to score is a lot more. Obviously not, you know, Anthony Gordon, who missed the penalty. But yeah, that's a whole nother thing. And let's move on to the G-Tech Stadium. And that's obviously Brentford versus Ipswich. That was goals galore. 7 goals. You know, we could have even started with this, because that's, you know, this was once again, back and forth. And, you know, this is a Brentford side that is playing out some, you know, I think some games of the season. You know, I know these won't be considered the games of the season because, you know, no disrespect to Brentford, you know, it's not big, massive games that people are going to sit and watch. But, you know, they've had some decent, you know, decent games. I think Brentford and Wolves, which ended 5-3, obviously, was like a couple of weeks back. And this was, yeah, same thing. Liam Delap didn't start for some reason, but I think Ipswich were absolutely fine without him. You know, they
had Hurst, didn't they?
They had Hurst. They had a couple of goals before Delap, who did come in and score. But I think, you know, Brentford are, in my opinion, an established Premier League side right now. They've got a very, very good manager in Thomas Frank.
I like Thomas Frank. Yeah.
I like Thomas Frank as well. And, you know, Mbeumo, yeah, he's having a great season, isn't he?
He's having a great season. And good news for them, yeah. Wissa is back as well.
Wissa is back. Wissa and Mbeumo, you know, again, double trouble.
Yeah.
You know, you get them into your fantasy league. Those two, they tend to score goals together, don't they? Mm. One usually assists the other and the other usually scores.
Right.
So I think, you know, having Wissa back makes them a much stronger side. I wonder how Ivan Toney's doing. I wonder if he's watching from Saudi Arabia, counting his cash, wondering, should I have stayed playing in crowds of 4,000? And, you know, he's given up a lot by moving to Saudi Arabia, hasn't it? But, you know, good luck to him. But, you know, Brentford, obviously, the Brentford machine, which is another side I think is run interestingly. They don't have a youth side. Were you aware of that?
Brentford, I didn't know that.
They don't have a youth side. They seem to stock their players from everywhere else, but they don't have a youth side. I think it was one of the rare sides that took the decision not to have a youth side. It's an oddity, but it seems to work for the Brentford model. And I think maybe also they keep, you know, the wage costs quite low. They're not paying young players. But, you know, this is why, you know, you have to think the players that they sign. It's often young players that, and it's very much a team that's into developing players. So obviously, you know, Carvalho was obviously signed by them a couple of seasons. We've had a few Liverpool players who've obviously moved over to Brentford. But Brentford are very much a side of developing talent as opposed to developing, you know, their own youth side, which they obviously don't have. So, but yeah, good luck to Brentford. I think, you know, they're almost definitely going to have a good side. But Thomas Frank will be worried about the goals they're conceding, because it's still a lot.
Yeah, they do ship goals, and that's the only problem. They can score them. We all know that. They've got good players, but they need to be better defensively. Yeah, they are far too open in a lot of situations.
Yeah. And let's move on. Finally, Goodison Park. It was Everton versus Fulham. Again, my philosophy. Who scored for Fulham?
It will be.
Who has previously played for?
Yeah, Everton.
Everton. There we go. So there might be something in that philosophy. I think you guys should look into it. Maybe, you know, get players in that have played for another, who are playing against their previous side, because the motivation to score might just be that little bit, you know, a little bit higher. But again, you know, I don't want to call it a boring draw, obviously. But, you know, this is, you know, draws are, you know, there's a story behind them. Obviously, Beto, you know, he was quite emotional at the end of this. We've got a couple of Everton supporters at the school. And, you know, they haven't been, what's the word I'm looking for, forthcoming, you know, of Beto. But, you know, he was quite emotional. I think, you know, he's probably, he was signed from, I think, where was it, Udinese or something like that. He'd scored a few goals in Udinese, but, you know, he's not a big name, obviously. And, you know, he's coming under a lot of, you know, into an Everton side with a lot of issues. And, you know, he seemed quite emotional after that equalizing. You said we did it for the Toffees. Mm. You know, so, you know, credit to him. You know, he's, I think there's a lot of work going on behind closed door from a Sean Dyche team.
A team that you would expect to certainly get better defensively. Dyche's way. So, yeah, I mean, you start at the back, don't you? And that's fine. Start at the back, get a bit more solid, and then... And then try and score a few more goals. Calvert-Lewin's he's getting chances, but he's not doing what you would expect him to do. Certainly, what he would have done two or three seasons ago, right?
Yeah.
He needs to improve, I think, or they bring Beto in and use him a bit more, and maybe he does the business. More.
Because Beto does hard work. I think it's the donkey work, as some people might call it. You know, he does a lot of running around. So I think credit to them, but. Everton will be fine. They'll be fine at the end of the day, won't they? You know, they're not fighting back from -9, -10 points or anything like that. I think Everton will have an okay season in the grand scheme of it. I think Fulham as well, a little bit like Forest. You know, they're a bit under the radar. A lot of people aren't talking about them, but they're having a quietly okay season on their part. You know, they've got Raul Jimenez, the Mexicano. You know, he's doing quite well. We've obviously got a few Arsenal players that transferred over to Fulham. They're also doing very well. So I think Fulham are on the other side who are just quietly just getting on with it, just getting on with playing their football and winning games, drawing games, and not losing too many, which is obviously the magic formula for football.
Yeah, I think Fulham have established themselves now, haven't they? I think they're pretty secure. I think they'd have to have a really shocker of a season to worry about being in that relegation fight, I think. But they're sitting, 10th now, I think. So it's 3-3-3. 3 wins, 3 draws, that's 3 okay. losses. That's so, okay. I mean, it's, you know.
That's all right. Yeah, at this point in the season, 9 games played. Mm. So that was game week nine. It was exciting game week. Game week 10. We'll be back.
Yeah, we've got back-to-back Brighton games.
Oh, it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough.
And obviously, United will have Ruud van Nistelrooy as the interim manager for now, before, obviously, Amorim is confirmed as the manager. Let's see how the Arsenal recover from their 2-2 draw. And City, I imagine City will be... I always feel sorry for sides after playing... Well... Sides that play a City team that hasn't scored a lot of goals in the previous side, because I think Pep will rectify something like that. So I think, you know, Lord help whoever is facing City
away
next.
To Bournemouth.
Oh gosh,
City are so
yeah. That could go either way. Because I don't
Bournemouth
think
been
I
doing think, stuff, haven't they? They're not doing like stuff. I don't think it's going to be an easy walk.
But. And like we've said, obviously a City side without Rodri isn't the same side at all. So let's see. And thank you very much, Mr. Bailey.
Thank you.
Enjoy talking to you all the time. And hopefully we can find another guest who can come in, talk about their side, get their perspective on things. Anyway, I've been Dean Sanusi talking to you, and have a lovely one. See you at game week 10. Bye-bye.